Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Permitting Side Deal Press Call. At this time, all lines are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time during this call you require immediate assistance, please press star zero for the operator. This call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Abigail Dillon. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining today's press conference on the permitting side deal that's been attached or is slated to be attached to a continuing resolution. Today, we're going to hear from environmental justice leaders and Hill champions about the threats that Senator Manchin's negotiations pose to communities and our bedrock environmental protections. We'll discuss the real solutions to conduct meaningful environmental reviews and provide communities with more meaningful opportunities to have their voices included as we build out the clean energy infrastructure of the future. My name's Abigail Dillon. I'm the president of Earth Justice. And at Earth Justice, we are honored to co-convene the Equitable and Just National Climate Forum. And we're thrilled to be with many other founding members on today's press event. We have an excellent lineup of speakers who represent the voices of communities that have been burdened too long by pollution from fossil fuels and our reliance on it. They all have firsthand experience dealing with the real human consequences of reckless development that has gone forward without regard to impacts on people. This side deal comes on the heels of passing historic legislation to address the climate crisis and also environmental injustice. And we have high hopes for turbocharging our transition to clean energy and also addressing environmental injustice in this country. But as we know, the bill also contains painful concessions that will further entrench fossil fuel interests in many communities, including in the Gulf, Appalachia, and Alaska. And as part of the deal to pass the Inflation Reduction Act, Senator Schumer promised Senator Manchin a vote on this deal. We've seen the text for the first time released late yesterday, and this is moving ahead extremely quickly without much time for review or consideration. I do want to be clear. I think everyone on this call, certainly including me, agrees that we must accelerate our transition to clean energy to fight climate change, but we cannot do so on the backs of the communities of color and low-income communities that have been bearing the impacts of fossil fuel pollution for far too long. So today we're joined by congressional champions and incredible environmental justice leaders, including Representative McEachin. We're going to be hearing from him first. There's a vote going on. We're awaiting Representative Grijalva, and we will make sure him just as soon as he's able to join us. And I'm going to, but I'm going to turn first to Representative McEachin, who is author and sponsor of the Environmental Justice for All Act. Congressman?
Thank you, Abby, and to all of you who have organized today's event and to all of you who are participating, thank you for allowing me to be part of this this program today. And to the press, good morning. I'm pleased to be with you today. I'm Congressman Donald McEachin. I have the privilege of being the congressman for Virginia's 4th Congressional District in the United States House of Representatives. And we all know why we are here today. The Manchin side deal cannot be included in any must-pass legislation put forward by Congress. When we passed the Inflation Reduction Act, we took historic, unprecedented action to combat climate change and accelerate our country's transition to a clean energy future while creating millions of new jobs. And while it did not include as robust of an investment in environmental justice priorities as we would have liked, it did include important provisions provisions that I have long advocated for that will help begin to combat and dismantle some of the longstanding environmental inequities that plague vulnerable communities. Funding for clean energy tax provisions, air pollution monitoring and mitigation, electrifying our school bus fleets, urban forestry, EJ block grants, making the NEPA process more efficient and more. The clean energy tax provisions will translate to lower energy bills for hardworking Americans, greater energy independence, a reduced reliance on the fossil fuel industry, and improved public health outcomes, especially for low-income communities, communities of color, and tribal and indigenous communities, as you know, who have all borne the brunt of environmental injustice and climate degradation for far too long. The IRA also includes funding that Chairman Grava and I have long advocated for to support NEPA and help ensure that agencies have the resources they need to undertake accurate and timely reviews of submitted projects. It is imperative that we not allow that progress that we've made to be eroded by Senator Manchin's permitting side deal. Our environmental review laws play a crucial role in making sure that community input is taken into consideration. This will help us avoid past mistakes that have subjected vulnerable communities to environmental harms caused by infrastructure investments and other developments. Low-income communities and communities of color were disproportionately harmed before NEPA. In fact, these egregious assaults on these communities are the reason why NEPA exists in the first instance. We already have legislation in place to deal with these situations, and we should not be re-legislating this process. Instead of moving forward with this permitting proposal, we should take steps to empower Americans, especially the most vulnerable among us, and ensure they have a place in the decision-making tree. The Environmental Justice Paul Act led by Chair Grijalva and I would strengthen NEPA, provide added protections for EJ communities, and give them avenues of recourse when confronted with environmental injustices in their area. It also promotes meaningful consultation between impacted communities and Washington and incorporates the notion of cumulative impacts to ensure that we are tailoring our policy solutions to each unique situation and avoiding the dreaded one-size-fits-all approach. Now more than ever, it is imperative that we continue building on our momentum with the Environmental Justice Hall Act and advance this legislation forward. We need to prioritize the health and well-being of the American people over the interests of corporate polluters in the fossil fuel industry, and the EJ for All Act will help us achieve that. As always, I would like to thank Chair Grijalva for his partnership and leadership on this bill and in this effort on doing away with the permitting deal. I extend my gratitude to every EJ group and advocate on today's call. We cannot stop fighting to achieve environmental justice, and that begins with stopping this permitting side deal and then moving forward with the EJ for All Act. Thank you all, and God bless.
Thank you so much, Representative McEachin. And my understanding is that Chairman Grijalva has joined us. Representative Raul Grijalva is the chair of the House Natural Resources Committee. He is, as Representative McEachin just spoke to, a longstanding champion of addressing environmental justices and has been outspoken against the permitting side deal. He recently spearheaded a letter signed by 77 House Democrats urging House leadership to not include the permitting language in must-pass legislation, including the CR. Chairman Grijalva, thank you for joining us. I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you very much, and let me thank my colleague and partner, Representative McEachin, his leadership on the development and the submission of our EJ for All legislation. It has been has been a very important contributor to that effort, a key contributor, and I want to take this time to thank him. You know, I think Representative McEachin kind of outlined where our opposition to a forced vote on a must-pass piece of legislation, keeping the government open, the CR, and the attendant riders that were developed as part of the deal to get Inflation Reduction Act done. And I think we start with the premise that no one involved in our effort is out there advocating and saying, let's shut down the government as a consequence of this bad deal. But we are saying it's a bad deal. And one of the ways that we felt was important for leadership to have in front of them, particularly on the Senate side, was the point about separate these votes. The consequence of the permitting reform, which has been a euphemism by the extraction industry and by their voices and their votes here in Congress, has been that euphemism has been to, as Mr. McEachin correctly said, dismantle and get rid of NEPA, the an avenue for the public to be able to address, know about, have the right to know, and be able to redress issues relative to the siting and the permitting of activities on public land and waters that affect their lives. And this is particularly true of frontline communities, indigenous communities, who have been overburdened historically with the siting and permitting of facilities and activities, extraction activities near or adjacent to or in the backyard of significant communities, 140 million people across the nation that would be classified as frontline communities. So we're not talking about a small, isolated totality of people. We're talking about 140 million. And EJ for All Act dealt with that, and it strengthened NEPA for the ability of people to participate, and it reformed the ability to redress legally when disparate treatment, discriminatory treatment happens to community based on them being a protected class, that they have the right to court. And the last thing is cumulative effect, that you cannot cite and permit installations, facilities, activities without adding up the cumulative effect of that one particular siting in addition to every other siting that is there, every other permitted use that is there, and you add the totality and you begin to see the true picture of what the public health consequences are, the environmental consequences are, the pollution and contamination consequences are for communities across this country. And while the emphasis is on EJ, quite frankly, the protection of the public's right to know and participate is a nationwide agenda item as well. And the support that we received on the letter asking for the separation of those two was primarily based on the fact that organizations across this country participated in talking to their members of Congress and getting the robust number of signatures that we did. You know, we stopped at 77. Members have come forward asking that they want to be part of it as well. So we've proceeded beyond 80, way beyond 80. And so I think that is a significant number. And this is brought to our leadership not as a threat, but as a reality. So you want to avoid the drama, you want to avoid the trauma, then separate them the way they should be. You know, they're struggling in the Senate. The Republicans want something worse than the Manchin rider regarding NEPA and permitting. They want carte blanche. But the permitting that was in the rider that we've been reacting to and that have been part of the what Manchin's office and others released recently, our opposition continues to be the same. And once somebody asked me, well, this is a personal get back at Manchin for other things he did in Build Back Better and with the IRA. No, it could have been Schumer's name on that, and we would have opposed it. It could have been Durbin's name on it, and we would have opposed it. The fact remains that this is bad policy, and this is no time for Democrats to be handing to the Republicans a victory. This is an opportunity to separate it and let them both stand on their own merit. I don't want the government to close, but I don't want to vote for a piece of legislation that is going to have historical negative consequences on communities that are already dealing with the reality of pollution, contamination concentrated in their areas and concentrated on their families. That's the reason for the letter. That's the reason for the ongoing struggle that we're having to separate these votes, and we're going to continue that because we think that it is not only a benchmark for environmental justice, because if we do the corollary, the rider, whatever you want to call it, it sets that agenda back even further, and it is a blow against public participation, science, and the public's right to know. And so by dismantling NEPA, those are two significant issues with historical consequences, negative consequences for communities. That's why we're doing what we're doing. And as I've told other people, when they ask me, what do you want? I'm not an independent broker in this question. I hope that I represent some values and some opinions that are out there. And the members that have signed the letter do as well, that we're not there in isolation. And if people want to genuinely talk about where we're going in the future, how impacted communities and frontline communities are going to be respected through the rest of the process, we're open to that, and we want to. But right now, given the choices, we have to oppose it of them being tied together in a must-pass piece of legislation. That's I think Senator Sanders said it the best when he said to put a gun to your head and then you're kind of, as a member of Congress, stuck to you. And we don't want that gun put at our head, and we don't want that gun unloaded on EJ communities across this country. And so that's where we're at, and then we'll continue in that effort going forward.
Thank you so much, Chairman Grijalva. We will hear next from Dana Johnson. She is the Senior Director of Strategy and Federal Policy with We Act for Environmental Justice.
Thank you so much, Abby, and thank you, Representative McEachin and Chair Grijalva, for setting such a powerful foundation for this conversation. As a collective centered on advancing environmental priorities in federal policymaking, the members of the Equitable and Just National Climate Platform reject attempts to reform permitting processes in a way that will undermine community voices and federal decision-making. Senator Manchin's permitting bill is the antithesis of environmental justice, which demands that public policy be based on mutual respect and free from any form of discrimination or bias. We know that inclusive and well-resourced permitting processes can lead to a just and pollution-free energy economy, and that it can be done at a scale and with the urgency needed to address climate change. While we are still doing in-depth analysis on the text that came out yesterday, some of the critical concerns that we have identified are: this bill curtails environmental review and public input. It allows for deficient state analyses to be substituted for a substantive, robust federal review. It bypasses more protective federal requirements. It promotes the use of categorical exclusions from the NEPA process, which would allow projects to be approved with little to no public input, transparency, or environmental impact analysis. It curtails public access to the courts by excluding impacted communities from seeking legal redress for illegal projects by establishing very high hurdles for impacted stakeholders to preserve their rights to seek legal redress and file them in time. It also enables polluting projects to move forward by prioritizing dirty fossil fuel projects with a designation of being of national importance. Additionally, we all agree that we need to urgently build out renewable energy and that a thorough environmental review process must be at the center of ambitious renewable energy deployment. But let us be clear, there is absolutely no evidence that renewable energy needs permitting reform or that renewables would benefit from hollowing out bedrock environmental policies. Supporting this permitting side deal will perpetuate racially, economically, and environmentally disproportionate harms that, as Chair Grijalva noted, will be felt for generations in communities of color and in areas of low income. Any vote for Senator Manchin's permitting bill is a vote for a sacrifice zone and a vote for sacrificing people. Back to you, Abby.
Thank you so much, Dana. We'll hear next from Michelle Roberts. She's the National Co-Coordinator of the Environmental Justice Health Alliance for Chemical Policy Reform. Michelle?
Thank you, Abby. Thank you, Chair Grijalva and Representative McEachin, and to all of our esteemed colleagues on this panel. We just want to reiterate the fact that this process, this secretive process, and borrowing a word from my colleague Dana Johnson, is the antithesis of environmental justice itself, just having a secretive backdoor process that does not include those who are most impacted. This process through which the energy permitting package came together is for what we consider very undemocratic. The inclusion of all of these harmful provisions as laid out, as you just heard from Dana Johnson and Representative McEachin and Grijalva, is a continuing resolution on any other must-pass legislation would silence the voice of frontline and environmental justice communities. We actually, at this point, demand the members of Congress to reject these harmful provisions being added to any must-pass legislation. At the Environmental Justice Health Alliance for Chemical Policy Reform, we have engaged with the administration and Congress on strengthening permitting processes through evidence-based reforms that would provide certainly for project sponsors and stakeholders and result in rapid deployment of energy projects without sacrificing through any through and meaningful community input and engagement. The permitting side deal undermines the countless decades of works that our affiliates, advocates, members, and community members across this country have put into building effective environmental review processes that leave no community behind. We must continue to stand on that. Thank you, Abby, for this opportunity, and I'll pass this back to you.
Thank you, Michelle. We'll hear next from Dr. Mildred McLean. She is the founder of Citizens for Environmental Justice. Dr. McLean? Dr. McLean, I think you may be on mute. We're not hearing you yet.
There we go. Good morning, everybody, and thanks for this opportunity to speak. Congressman Grijalva, we're one of those 140 million people that you're talking about down here in the Southeast region, and we echo the sentiment that we strongly oppose any permitting reform attempts that would undermine community voices in federal decision-making. We have been working with the National Environmental Policy Act for over 35 years, and it is very important to us. The National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA as we call it, is a critical tool to ensure that environmental justice communities are always included in federal decision-making processes. It is the only tool that frontline communities, low-wealth communities, communities of color, and indeed indigenous communities have to influence federal infrastructure projects that will impact them the most. Energy projects can have enormous air and water pollution impacts that communities often have to live with throughout the lifetime of the infrastructure. We cannot weaken environmental review and public input processes for projects that can impact communities for decades to come. There is so much research that shows that a majority of federal actions that are subject to NEPA review are already reviewed through an expedited analysis. NEPA is a convenient scapegoat, we know, but the facts do not support the argument that NEPA is the cause for delay of public infrastructure projects. Research makes it clear that the real culprits of prolonged project timelines are often, one, lack of project funding, two, changes in project design, and insufficient agency resources and training, not public input and review of health and environmental impacts. So it is clear that the intent and impact of the permitting side deal is to limit public participation and silence community voices. Unlike the Environmental Justice for All Act, it tries to limit our voice, and we cannot stand by and allow this to happen. If passed, these permitting provisions being proposed by Senator Manchin will be a giveaway to the very industries that are poisoning our communities and causing the climate crisis. Instead, as has been said, we need to restore and strengthen the voice of our communities in federal decisions and processes such as NEPA. This is imperative if we want to begin repairing the country's legacy of environmental injustice and begin to address in a real way environmental justice and to create an energy future that works for everyone. In the last 30 years, communities of color living around federal facilities under the jurisdiction of the Department of Energy associated with nuclear weapons production have used NEPA to ensure that our voice has been included in all decision-making process associated with those projects. For example, weighing in on the return of 15,000 spent nuclear fuel rods from Europe, as well as the disposition of 50 metric tons of surplus weapon-grade material, plutonium. Without NEPA, we would have no voice. So we stand with the congressman, and we're asking others to stand and to resist this permitting side deal. Thank you, and I'll turn it back over to Abby.
Thank you so much, Dr. McClain. And now we'll hear from our final speaker, Richard Moore, co-coordinator of Los Jardines Institute and national co-coordinator of the Environmental Justice Health Alliance. Richard?
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Abby. Thank you to my colleagues. Just as we wind up this particular session, I just wanted to expand for a minute very quickly on several of the things that that have been mentioned here. One, I think on the part of many of us, I'm talking about hundreds upon hundreds of grassroots organizations throughout this country that are working on environmental and economic justice issues, that that Senator Manchin's bill is obvious from our standpoint. It is a move to dismantle and eliminate. I think that's very, very crucial for us to understand, is to dismantle and eliminate NEPA. As my colleagues have said, for many of us in grassroots communities throughout this country, we have been fighting to strengthen the NEPA for involvement of those that are most highly impacted. So This side deal will prioritize dirty fossil fuel projects, and we know that, and will privilege project sponsors over the public, and will entrench environmental racism into decision-making by sidelining the voices of impacted communities. I just want to say that we do not use the word racism, or we do not use the word environmental racism lightly. Very clearly, we see in this dismantling and eliminating the NEPA as that incredible impact in environmental injustice and environmental racism. Instead of what we are doing, and we will continue to do with any bill, this bill or any other bill, to urge Congress to proactively prioritize protective decision-making by advancing legislation such as the EJ for All Act, and we're very clear about that, H.R. 2021. The EJ for All Act is an example, and I say it again, the EJ for All Act is an example of what a democratic process looks like and what true community engagement looks like, a direct contrast from what this side dirty deal is proposing. We are asking and calling on Senator Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Hoyle and to all Democrats on both sides of the chambers to reject this permitting side deal that extends a lifeline to fossil fuels, and it was created in backroom discussions and silences community voices. This bill should not be, and I repeat it, this bill should not be in the continued resolution. And once it is decoupled, we ask that they are, our officials oppose it. And lastly, I'll say, again, we ask that you independently pass the EJ for All Act, a true example of a bill where our community voices are reflected. And before I turn it over to Abby, I just want to close by saying this. The EJ for All bill, as many of you on this call and many of our colleagues know, there's been hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of participants from grassroots communities throughout this country in the development of the EJ for All Act, and at the same time, the staff, both from the senator's side and the chairman's side, that we have been engaging with for this period. So this is a true people's bill. And as we've asked both Senator McEachin and Chairman Raul, is this a people's bill, the EJ for All Act? Or is this a bill that's being developed without the input of grassroots people and workers throughout this country? And so thank you very much. This is truly a people's bill, and we're asking for total support across the board for the EJ for All Act. Again, thank you, and Abby, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks, everyone who is on this call. We'll now move to the Q&A portion of the event. Please raise your hand and you will be promoted to ask your question to the panelists. If you could state your name and outlet before asking your question, we'd be very grateful.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And if you would like to withdraw your question, please press star followed by the number 2. Your first question will come from Ari Natter of Bloomberg. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I had a question for Representatives Grijalva and McEachin. If you're so opposed to this permitting deal, why not say you'll shut down the government over it? I mean, why not make good on
Could you repeat your question, please? Hello?
Thank you. I didn't get the question, like Mr. McEachin. This is Raul. So if you could repeat it or somebody could repeat it for him.
Conference center is terrible.
I think the question was, if you are opposed to the bill, why aren't you stating that you will vote against it if it's included in SCR?
Well, I'll just speak from my own personal perspective. Go ahead, Mr. Chairman, you first.
No, go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say from my own personal perspective, I don't particularly want to hold a gun to my leadership's head. They know my position. If forced to, I will there are no circumstances under which I can see voting for the Manchin bill in the form and format that it's in, whether it's a standalone or attached to a must-pass bill. We would like, at least from my perspective, I would like to have conversation with my leadership and make sure they understand the whys and the wherefores that lead me to the position that I'm taking.
Yeah, I basically concur with what Mr. McEachin just said. We went into this process with, you know, keeping it simple. And the simplicity for legislative work is that each piece of legislation up or down on its own merit. And so I'm prepared to deal with the CR on its own merit. And on its own merit, generally speaking, I would support it. But if it's tied to and tethered by another piece of legislation, a rider, whatever you want to call it, that basically creates the kind of historic consequences that I spoke to earlier, it becomes very difficult. I don't think Mr. McEachin and I are not telling individual members that have signed the letter, you must do this afterwards. I think every member will come to their own conclusions. If there is a risk involved, with government shutdown, the risk is to tether these two together, period. That's the risk. And divide them, and then they stand on their own merit. For me, it is a simple and direct way to deal with this question. As I said earlier, you avoid the drama of your question, and you avoid the trauma of members having to come to the conclusion of how they're going to vote yes or no on a must-pass piece of legislation to keep the government open. It's unfair. Our leadership is in control of that and should exercise the discretion for the sake of our party to allow us to deal with this separately. That's still my pitch, and the standalone for EJ is another pitch, and we'll forward both those. But at this point, what is the crisis point for me is these being joined together, and the agenda is to separate them. You know, I know people will like to ask the question, what will you do? How will it be the consequences? Whose fault is it? And right now, we can avoid all those discussions by splitting this particular piece of legislation. And until it's done, and until there is some understanding that it's either split or removed, this whole question that the gentleman asked is going to continue to loom.
And I think it's also worth remembering that no one picked up the phone and called us. You know, it's not like EJ for All hadn't been out there. It's not like the chairman and I haven't been running all across the country with our grassroots advocates talking about the importance of this bill. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that this Manchin side deal threatens the very notion of EJ for All and its efficacy. So no one picked up the phone and called us, and I personally don't feel obligated to vote for a side deal that I had nothing to do with.
Yeah, I stated the same way Mr. McEachin did. I didn't shake anybody's hands. I didn't make a deal. Nobody consulted. Nobody asked. Nobody took the time to understand, to ask the perspective, because they would have heard it early, and perhaps you could have avoided this whole problem. This was a deal made in the Senate and then brought over to the House, you know, and whether it was the administration, congressional leadership, Senate leadership that put this deal together. The rank and file of Congress did not participate that, and the and the people that have been promoting the EJ for All bill and putting it together and getting it ready were never called into that discussion. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of this drama and trauma is of their own making. We didn't create this. We're reacting to something they created.
Your next question comes from Michael Martz of Richmond Times-Dispatch. Please go ahead.
Yes, I was going to ask Don, Congressman McEachin, who is driving this process on separating it, the Senator or the House? I've heard that there's going to be potentially a cloture vote in the Senate on Monday about whether to include these provisions in the CR. Is that where it needs to happen, or in the House? You have control in the House.
You know, I just as soon have it happen in the Senate. their rules seem to be more conducive to forcing the separation without having a government shutdown. I want to applaud my Senator, Tim Kaine, for coming on board yesterday with his opposition to the Manchin deal. From what I read, Michael, and it's only what I read, obviously I don't have any particular insight, there seems to be enough opposition in the Senate to kill the deal. So along with the leadership of my chairman, Mr. Grijalva, we will dig in on the House side and see what happens. But we cannot allow a bill to pass that essentially neuters EJ for All without even a vote being taken on EJ for All. Again, don't mean to sound like a parrot, but nobody picked up the phone and called me. Nobody asked me or anyone I know about the implications of this side deal on a bill that the chairman and I have been working on now for the better part of 2 years, along with our grassroots advocates. I have absolutely no compunction against voting against it.
I believe the closure vote, this is Raul, is on Tuesday or month, and that's obviously a significant vote. That's about tying them together. You know, the issue on the Senate side is that they tie it together, send it to us, and we are limited if not having the ability at all to change what they send over, to separate it. What happens in the Senate is critical, and the letter that some of the five senators sent out was encouraging. Senator Kaine and others have joined that, and then McConnell's announcement that, as bad as the present writer is, that it's not bad enough, so they're going with an even more extreme destruction of NEPA and ignoring EJ communities on the Republican side. So they have their own machinations that they have to deal with at the Senate. If they don't tie them together, that would be it wouldn't break my heart at all to have it come to the House clean as CR. And then Mr. McEachin and I will press for the floor vote that we think is important for the EJ for All bill.
Your next question comes from Jeff St. John of Canary Media. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking the time, Representatives Grijalva and McEachin. I'm wondering if you might have any thoughts on the electricity transmission reform portions of the Energy Independence and Security Act. And I know it's a little bit not germane to the current political situation, but whether or not you and other folks involved in EJ for All have any thoughts on whether or not they could support some of the expanded authority to FERC to manage cost sharing and streamline or in some cases override state opposition to electric transmission development as a part of an overall, you know, decarbonization strategy. Curious to know if you see any merits to that authority in countermanding the harms that you've described potentially from, you know, taking away NEPA for fossil projects, and if you'd be willing to support any similar transmission reform in any other piece of legislation in the future.
You know, I can certainly appreciate your question and the sincerity by which you put it forward, but you're essentially asking me and the chairman to negotiate through the press, and that's not something that I'm inclined to do.
Your next question comes from Brian Dabbs of National Journal. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks very much. Representative Grijalva, I was wondering if I could ask you a quick couple of questions. So one, just building off the question that was asked there, what do you make of the argument, which has been voiced by a lot of climate change champions, like, for instance, Senator Brian Schatz, that you do need some expedited measures or expedited permitting procedures in order to build out all the massive deployment that's needed in the transmission line for clean energy. Just generally, what do you make of that? And then I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about Senator Schumer's handling of this. So but for him, a lot of the attention is put on Senator Manchin, but for Senator Schumer, this kind of wouldn't be foisted on you, and you said you weren't consulted about it. So what do you generally make of his handling of this legislation, which has led to, you know, kind of this position where it's either going to go on CR or not?
The off-ramp on the transmission, I think, is the least controversial of everything that's in there, except for the two particular, except for the projects that overrule court decisions that I have opposition to, that are particular to a senator. I think that's the whole point, that when we talk about permitting reform, transmission lines, you know, the concept of renewable and alternatives are not part of the conversation. Now, I understand that it could be the part of the conversation in a particular senator's mind, but it's not in the text. And so I think that's important and merits its discussion, but separate from, but that is not, you know, I hope that it's not interpreted that's the candy that makes everything taste better in terms of the rider. It's not. And in fact, you know, giving more prominence, more ability, more resources in order for the NEPA process and the regulatory process and the approval process to be able to do the job and to include the alternative and renewables as an essential part of that going forward. Mr. McEachin and I and people that signed this letter, including 10 chairmen of committees in the House, by the way, would be open. Renewable transmission is in text, but it's not the specificity, and it's not the resource, and it's not the focus, and that's what we would like to see. But that's down the road. I mean, right now we're dealing with this reality, and I can't find a sugar coating, including this issue, that makes everything else go down easy. It's not.
Can you address how Senator Schumer has handled this?
I avoided that question because I intended to avoid it. It's the House of Commons and the House of Lords. And the House of Lords sometimes works in mysterious ways. And in the House of Representatives, it's pretty direct. And I prefer it that way. I don't understand the strategy. And I can understand the desperation of trying to put a deal together. But to look at EJ and look at NEPA as a throwaway in that discussion. There wasn't a lot of calculation there, and certainly not a lot of understanding. But strategically, that wasn't, I don't think, for the sake of unity within our own ranks as a party and going forward into these midterms, that strategy, I think, is it wasn't good. But we have now time to undo that and move forward with the government operations and serious discussions about transmission and serious discussions about EJ for All. I see that as an optimistic look at what can happen later on. But presently, you know, I'm not in a position to judge what that strategy was. I just think it was wrong. I guess I did judge it, right?
Ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the allotted time for our question session. I will now turn the conference back to Abigail Dillon for closing remarks.
Just a big thank you to Representative McEachin, Chairman Grijalva, for taking time out of their incredibly busy days to speak with us and answer so many questions. And thanks to all who came, and thank you very much to all the panelists for sharing your experience and your expertise with us today.
Thank you very much to all, and to all the people that have been working very, very diligently and hard, organizations, individuals, on getting the word out and doing the advocacy that's necessary that put us in the position that we weren't in 2 weeks ago. And I speak for Mr. McEachin, we're very grateful, very appreciative. And as we've stated to leadership, we're not independent brokers, and I think your efforts have proven that. So thank you very much.
Amen.
Thank both of you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude your conference call for this morning. We would like to thank everyone for participating, and you may now disconnect your lines.